Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Do you like Electronic Arts? No. Do you like hearing about Electronic Arts' latest developments? Also no? Well, then you should probably stop listening.
Yeah, that's about right.
I'll save you guys an episode.
You know, it's a whole slew of, like, bullcrap. And then at the end, there's some, like, interesting things, like...
So it's every other week.
Yes.
Oh.
Exactly.
I see what you're doing there. Consistency is the key.
Consistency is the key to something.
Maybe. Is consistency the spice of life, or is that an oxymoron?
Variety is...
Variety is definitely the true saying, but is consistency more spicy because it's more rare?
Interesting.
On a philosophical level, do you think that people as a whole are more consistent or more unpredictable?
I think that people generally are more consistent.
Interesting.
Then
on a human scale, that is probably true.
Yeah.
In my personal experience, that is not true.
I mean, I guess if we're talking about, like,
there are few
problem
people.
Solving.
Okay.
Or, like, you know, competence.
That's a different.
It's probably, there's way more variety.
Job doing.
Yes. But as far as existence, like existing through their lives, they're probably generally consistent.
Yeah, I guess that's probably true. If I changed it to say in their professional lives, do you think that pivots to being more variety, like more unpredictable or more consistent?
I think you end up dealing with that version of Batman on a regular basis.
I would agree that on the spectrum of their lives, they are more consistent.
Yes.
But I feel like in a professional setting, consistency is rare.
Unless you just say they're consistently unreliable.
Right. Which isn't consistency.
Anyways.
It's just food for thought.
Always foods for thought.
That's what we do here. We have philosophical conversations
that leave you with more questions than answers at the end. It's the gift that keeps on giving. The Gamers Do Podcast, your weekly roundup of news and commentary related to the video game industry and anything else that might pique our interests.
Like philosophical questions about people being more consistent or not.
Yeah.
Because I kind of want to keep going on it, but there's really not much more to say. I'm just going to talk myself in circles.
Yeah. I've been doing that a lot lately, just talking in circles or eating the same things over and over again.
Yeah, I've been pretty bad at it. There's every now and then I'll catch myself in something where I'm like, did I tell this person this already? And they're just being polite. And then I have to I stop myself and go, did I already tell you? And they go, yeah. And I go, just tell me next time.
Yeah.
Don't make me keep going.
Yeah. My brain's slowly melting.
Because the consistency thing, right? There's consistency. The consistency in your broader life is like in the people that I would count as consistent, like consistent in the way that I know how they're going to respond to me if I ask for something or if I ask a question or whatever. Consistency in response time.
Uh-huh.
Like, I know that if I send a snap, I'm going to get a response from you and Dewey. If I send a message, whatever, I'm going to get a response.
Yeah.
Then I'll like go into work and you send an email to somebody and you're like, this is a fucking crapshoot if they're going to even read it.
Yep.
And so now you're into those, all those things where it's like, they're probably inconsistency in their life. If they get a text message, they probably respond to it.
Yeah.
But then it's like a work email and it's like, well,
not feeling this one.
Or like you'll have the one where it's like consistency of there's hyper consistent, which is I'm going to eat the same meal every single night. That's the Bruce Green Chipotle method.
Yeah.
And then there's the, I'm going to cook something different every night. And it also, as far as I'm concerned, those people are just insane.
So either end of the spectrum's insane.
Right. Be in the middle. Have a little bit where it's like we have a Friday out technically.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the week, we kind of just we'll either cook big and have like leftovers for a couple days. Or, you know, we'll just kind of like, mm-hmm. I feel like having a mix of each is the norm.
Yeah. Moderation in all things. There's no new releases, it looks
like. There's not.
Jesus.
Next week.
What a shit show that's going on around here.
Well, you know why there's no releases? Because number one, unfortunately, we're still in the layoff timeline, but we're slowing down a little bit. Singularity 6 has laid off a third of its staff following Palio's release on Steam. In a statement provided to Polygon, the studio said the decision came after, quote, it evaluated the support needed, end quote, for the MMO. The studio raised $30 million in 2021 to fuel Palio's development, which launched in August 2023. Last month, the game reached over 3 million players.
That's respectable for an MMO I've never heard of.
That is the one that is, like, very... I don't want to say Disney-esque, but it's like that very simple level of you. That's where I think we've watched the monthly comp, or I've shown you it, of Ray playing, where he's trying to plant his house because you get like a plot of land that is your individual zone. And
yeah.
He DC'd from the server and had to walk all the way back and went to do it again and then DC'd again.
Yep, I know that of which you speak. Okay.
Once again, let me quote you a... August 2023 highlight reel monthly video from Ray's YouTube.
Yep. Just cataloging those.
I have problems.
I mean, that's... Everyone's got problems. You know? No one's perfect. And if they are, then they should kill themselves.
Speaking of problems, let's talk to Levi.
Yeah. Speaking of problems.
Not that he's a problem. But it was like right after, maybe it was the Thursday after the news broke of Rooster Teeth shutting down.
Yeah.
And obviously a lot of my hoodies are Funhouse hoodies.
Yeah.
And he's like, is that a Funhouse hoodie? I was like, now this is weird. I was like, I know you know Rooster Teeth, but like now we didn't discuss Funhouse in a time that we overlapped with each other.
Yeah.
And so we're just kind of like discussing it and like, and how it all fell away and whatever. And it was just like, this is weird, man. This is weird.
Yeah, he...
Because we were talking... The hinge point of how I got there in my brain was we were having niche discussions where I was diving all the way back to Inside Gaming videos that I knew existed and where everyone came from to form Funhouse.
Yeah. He's the one who... Like, I knew of Rooster Teeth and I knew of Red versus Blue and all that. But he's the one that introduced me to the Rooster Teeth podcast.
Okay.
And when that was like years and years and years
ago. I was probably back when it was just coming out of Drunk Tank.
Yeah. So he's been a Rooster Teeth fan for a long time. Long, long time.
Letter B, Game. Wow, really? The name of the company is Game?
Game.
Not that game. No. Game staff have reportedly been told to expect a wave of redundancies as employees are moved to zero-hour contracts. That is a terrifying term.
I had to look up what a zero-hour contract was because I wasn't sure.
I don't know what it means.
It is a contract where they do not have to guarantee you any hours at all.
Oh.
So, like, you sign a contract to work for them, but they could literally just not ever have you work or pay you.
Right.
Wow. what a timeline we live in.
This is according to Eurogamer, which reported that the company has been making zero-hour contracts standard for, quote, most non-managerial staff going forwards, end quote. I just want to be clear. If you have a zero-hour contract, you don't work for them.
No.
You should just leave.
That who would work under those conditions? I mean, if you're desperate, obviously. But, like, you could go... They could be like, all right, we're not going to... We don't need you for 2 weeks. And then, like, literally be like, okay, next week I need you to work 40 hours.
Yeah.
And we have mandatory overtime. So
yeah, I got crunch. I got to get this done. I need you to pull 70 hours this week, and then I never want to hear from you again.
Yeah.
But you're still under contract.
Yep.
Unreal. And Immortals of Avium developer Ascendant Studios has reportedly furloughed the majority of its staff. Seeing how the... I mean, that's kind of wild, because I just don't know if that game ever took off the way that they thought it would.
Definitely not.
Well, definitely not the way they thought it would, but in general. And also, I wonder if... I don't know. The zero contract thing fucking threw me.
Yes. That one I also threw me. Like, I was like, what is this? And I spent more time than I should have probably looking into it.
It's like, is there a company benefit to having a zero-hour contract?
Yeah, they just fluid workforce.
Right, right. Like, in theory, it's a fluid workforce, and you can choose when you spend money on people and whatever. But is there, like, some loophole where you can be like, we're a company of 3 million people, all on zero-hour contracts, none of them actually do any work, and we don't pay any of them.
Yes.
Save for 1 week a year.
Yeah, because then they're... Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess technically they're all contractual, so you don't have to provide them with any benefits.
Right. So then why would any... What is the benefit of signing one? That's the part that it gets confusing. Is even if you were desperate in a zero-hour contract, why would you sign one to lock yourself into a contract when you gain quite literally nothing from it? Except for the hope that they call you in.
I guess that's it. Work experience.
Like, but you might not get any. That's the thing. Like, you'd be better off in an internship.
Yeah. I don't know.
Where you have zero money, zero benefits, zero whatever, but you're probably working.
It's like the epitome of, like, the whole idea of gig economy.
Basically, yeah. But then why would you enter contract with one studio and instead just have a 3-month contract for the work that they would give you?
I don't know. Maybe they're
like, wouldn't it be better for you as a person at that point to be like, oh, I'm an artist that does whatever. And it's like 3 months for this work, whatever. That's our contract, signed, done, terms.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of 0 hour for 2 years where you work the same amount that you would have in that 3 months had you just done that. And then you could have been freed up to, because what if they're 0 hour contracts with exclusivity clauses in them where you can't participate in other things?
That would be wild. Like, that would have
then
to
then,
be
then you're truly wasting time.
That would have to be illegal. Like, I'm assuming
0 hour non-competes, like, that's ridiculous.
I'm assuming that whatever, I don't know where this, I'm assuming it's a UK based
yeah, I have no idea,
because it couldn't exist in the European Union.
No, they'd freak out.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's just a wild one. It is just a wild one.
Or, again, I fundamentally don't understand how it actually works. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those where it's like, 0 hour, but none of our 0 hour people actually work 0 hours. We just have that as a backup, so we don't have to release them. We can just have them, but then there's no work.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like cloud resources of people. You just turn it off when you don't need it.
I mean, that's kind of like a company's, like,
entire mantra.
They would love that.
Yeah. What if I could just kill all my workers and then revive them when I needed them again?
Yeah.
So they're not burning any resources anywhere.
Our workers are actually just computers. We turn them off and then turn them on when we need them. And that's it.
My electricity bill goes way down.
Number two. EA's Motive Studio is set to work on the next Battlefield game alongside DICE, Criterion, and Ripple Effect. In a post shared on the game's website, EA shared that the studio behind Star Wars Squadron and the recent Dead Space remake will put together a team focused on developing the upcoming game. Motive's general manager, Patrick Claus, said Dead Space remake creative director Roman Caposorial, executive producer Philippe Ducharme will build the team. Klaus confirmed that development will continue on its own Iron Man project, which remains, quote, an important priority, end quote, for the studio. Now, a little addendum about the the Dead Space 2 remake rumors. Motive did have a small team working on ideas for a new game, not a remake of the second entry in the franchise, but the project never received the green light from EA, and any further Dead Space plans have been put on hold. Apparently because the sales of the Dead Space remake, Dead Space 1 remake, were not good.
That's what I heard too, but it did better than Callisto Protocol, so...
It did, and I don't know what they expected,
so,
because
so what's that say about that that's not franchise, but genre?
I think this is... I have to assume this is another case of, like, corporate expecting... high expectations on, because, like... The first Dead Space game was popular, but not that popular. Like, it didn't...
Right, it was in that genre of... It was super popular and a cult classic.
Yeah.
And then 2 did some good stuff, and then 3 was hated.
Yeah.
Does this sound familiar, Mass Effect?
Yeah. But even that, like, I don't even think it even approached.
Even if you remastered Mass Effect, I don't know how much love you'd get.
They did remaster Mass Effect.
But I stand by exactly what the fuck I just said,
though. They remastered the trilogy.
I forgot.
Yeah. It did well enough.
I should say not remaster, but remake. Like, yeah, doing remake. The Dead Space level of remaking it.
I don't know. I don't know.
Motive's just getting kicked around.
Well, EA is just absorbing every studio for Battlefield.
Yeah, because they have to save it after how bad 2024 was.
Yeah, but like...
Again.
I have a hard time believing Battlefield's ever going to be successful the way they think it's going to be successful. Battlefield ever competed with Call of Duty?
Yes.
When Call of Duty was, like, not Call of Duty.
Okay, so yes. If you want to go with... Have they competed with Call of Duty and actually thrown punches and landed them? Yes. Did Call of Duty eventually in the later rounds come out as a absolute juggernaut? Yes.
Yeah, okay. So what was the last competitive Call or Battlefield? Like, maybe Battlefield? One? Like, one as in...
1/5?
The most recent one?
Yeah, where they went back.
That was by far, I think, the best Battlefield, but I would not say it competes with Call of Duty as far as sheer numbers go.
I believe it competed with Call of Duty at that time because that was before 2019 remaster. And 2019's Modern Warfare reset the scale number.
Yeah.
Where initially, think about it, Battlefield before, if we go back even further, right? Battlefield 3 competed real hard.
That was going to be the last one I said competed hard.
4 competed pretty well, too, because then they were getting into that.
Were they really that close, though, in, like, sales?
Probably not that close, but they still competed pretty well because that's when Call of Duty starts hitting those jetpack future ones that people were kind of, like, wanting a little bit more grounded stuff in.
Yeah.
And that's what you got in Battlefield. And then Battlefield went silent. That's where you kind of hit that weird, like, what's Battlefield doing? It had been so long since 4. And then was it before 4 they did Hot Pursuit? What the fuck's the name of that one? Undercover? No.
Hardline.
They did that, which everybody was like, why is this an entire game and not an expansion?
Yep.
Then they did, I think, 4. And that was when, like, Advanced Warfare and, like, Infinite Warfare were going around, and the Kevin Spacey press X to pay respects on the coffin meme and all that was happening. And Battlefield was just kind of there, still living on its glory days of jump out of a jet, shoot a jet, get back in the jet, you know, all that fun stuff. And then Everett was clamoring for stuff to get back to being kind of grounded a little bit and not just these space tech fights, which is funny considering with the state of shooters now.
Yeah.
And then one comes out, which was confusing everybody because they didn't name it Battlefield 5. And then Battlefield 1, I think, did really well.
It did well, but I don't think it did anywhere as close to Call of Duty numbers.
Maybe not to direct Call of Duty numbers, but I think it was back up to like Battlefield 3 levels of popularity.
I don't...
Like, I think it was actually at a respectable thing where you went, what shooter do you like right now? Whichever Call of Duty was in the future or Battlefield 1? And that question, you could almost 50-50 flip among gamers, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's the sentiment, like, but I think if you looked at the sales numbers, it would still be like...
Which might be true. But then you hit 2019.
I wish I could find a breakdown of them comparing to each other.
In 2019, hard stops the Battlefield competition line. Modern Warfare coming out in 2019, that's, you're done. Unless you were just re-releasing Battlefield 3 and saying that we have future support for all servers and we merge everything in or whatever, like, there's just no, you're done. It's not as good, and sorry about your luck. I don't know what to tell you. You're done.
I know it's not a fair comparison, but the only numbers I can find without digging into, like, you know, Wikipedia articles and making my own comparison is that lifetime sales, which isn't really a good comparison because it's more Call of Duty.
So let's not even compare lifetime sales. I'll do it this way. I'll do it this way because these we can find. And this proves your point, but it's not as close to what I want to say.
Yeah.
Top 10 games sold every single year. What competes with Call of Duty? GTA. A game that came out in 2013.
Yeah.
And didn't release a new game still. And is still in the top 10 every single year. And the only other games that are consistent in that are sports and Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
Battlefield is not in the top 10. Yeah. Except for I believe the only time it will gross the top 10 is the years it releases. But it does not have staying power to stick. And it does not have yearly releases like Call of Duty does. Which is partially how Call of Duty and the sports games cheat getting into that top 10 every year, is they almost FOMO you with new releases, in quotes, new releases, same features, new nothing really. And then there's just GTA, which is so confusing how many sales it still has year to year, which it just doesn't make sense.
I went down too far of a rabbit hole.
Even Red Dead doesn't show up. Like,
looking at Battlefield and COD sales, I guess my, like, the post that I kept seeing was people comparing, and I think it's the closest they've ever been, and that is Battlefield 4 and Call of Duty Ghost.
Right, because that is in Call of Duty's shameful years.
Yeah, and they still outsold Battlefield.
Right, because they were a launch, remember at that point, Call of Duty Ghost was a launch title on new consoles.
Yeah.
Battlefield was not.
Mm-hmm. Lifetime sales aren't a good indicator, but
no, Call of Duty will smoke it.
Yeah, it's like 400 million versus 89 million.
Yeah, well, Call of Duty also has five games beforehand, because beforehand their competitor was Medal of Honor.
Yeah.
Which, even that, guess who smokes that competition? Call of Duty.
Medal of Honor, they should fucking bring that shit back. In a meaningful way, not the latest.
Not the way they attempted to, and it was terrible.
Yeah, well, there was the VR title.
Oh, well, there was that one. There was the one in 2012 or whatever that I gave a 6 out of 10.
The latest title is, which was, I think, probably 5 years ago now, maybe less, was a VR title that apparently was actually good.
It was made by Vince Zampella and them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it wasn't really a full thing. It was kind of like a tech demo of sorts.
Yeah, it's just, here's my thing, I guess, is if you're a fan of Call of Duty, and you're not, so this doesn't pertain to you.
Yeah. How dare you assume my FPS?
I'll assume your FPS all day. Sub 30, you pleb.
Jesus.
That's really rude.
I mean, it's true.
No, it's not. Your FPS is way higher than that. Come on. My FPS is higher than that. You want EA to keep trying to do something good with Battlefield. You always want there to be two.
I agree. You
can't have there be one, or Call of Duty Ghosts happens again.
I agree, but I also don't want them to sacrifice literally everything else to
how they're going about it is absolutely insane.
Yeah, to make a Battlefield game that we all know.
Let's be fair about this, though. If it's not Battlefield, it's them still trying to make the new Mass Effect and say that Dragon Age is fine. They're doing one thing with like the weird studios going this way, and they're doing the other thing. Like, remember how they split themselves?
Yeah.
EA, they went, we're doing sports and not sports.
Mm-hmm.
And now the not sports team is getting split into attempting to save Battlefield and Mass Effect. And Dragon Age, they just keep almost talking about like it's been done for 2 years when clearly no the fuck it hasn't.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, no, don't worry. We hired back another person for BioWare that'll fix everything.
What's interesting to me is...
And then meanwhile, on the sports side, they're like, oh, we bought... that wasn't Playground Games. The racing guys from Project Cars. We bought them. And then we didn't know what to do with Criterion anymore. And we don't know how to handle the Need for Speed license. So frankly, we got Madden. You like Madden, though. You like Madden?
Yeah.
Did you want to race a car? I like Madden. That's how that other side of the house goes.
At this point, BioWare and whatever. No, I don't think there's anyone else even with BioWare now. It's just BioWare. Right off.
Well, they're gone. They closed all the other BioWares. There's no more.
They're dead studio walking right now because it's EA. And how can you tell me EA has any faith in that when they've literally, they have another fucking studio they're throwing at Battlefield. But have you heard of anyone helping with Dragon Age or Mass Effect or any of the story-driven stuff?
Helping, no, but I did rehire a guy that used to work here 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Does that do anything for you? Do anything for you? that's literally their plan. What if we just hire back the good old days? All right.
Ridiculous.
Time for more EA. Number 3. Electronic Arts is increasing the price for its EA Play subscription service. The standard EA Play tier will increase from $5 a month to $6, with the annual fee rising from $30 to $40. Meanwhile, the EA Play Pro subscription, which gives users extra in-game rewards and perks as well as access to all of the publisher's latest games as soon as they launch, is increasing from $15 a month to $17, with the annual membership up to $120 from $100. You annoy me.
Okay.
That you flip the higher cost on the fucking last one.
Yeah.
The first three, you're consistently the other way. Remember what I said about consistency? An email detailing the changes was issued to subscribers, explaining that the new price will come into effect as of May 10th, 2024. EA said these changes are being made to reflect changes in currency value and to bring fees in line with market value. EA is far from alone in this. Sony raised the price for annual subscriptions due to PlayStation Plus back in September. In the wider world of entertainment, both Disney and Netflix have increased the price of their subscription services within the past 6 months. Netflix is reportedly expected to do so again later this year, and all the reasons they tell you are absolute horseshit.
They are absolute horseshit. It's getting so bad. I'm
officially down to basically paying for a month of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it. Like,
yeah.
It's what I already do with EA Play anyway,
mm-hmm.
but I'm about to be that way with some like streaming things where it's like, I'll pay for a month, binge everything I need to within this month, and then I'm done. I'm not letting you catch me.
So
not whaling it.
I went down. I think I talked about this 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. Discovered that Netflix's kids account doesn't have ads, even if you're on the lowest tier.
Which is good.
Yeah, which... predominantly, we have Netflix now for Aiden.
Right. But that's also like a good just like ethical thing.
Yeah.
Don't have the kids watching ads.
Yeah. So I dropped our Netflix account down to the lowest paid tier, which is, I think, $7.99, and it's ad supported. Because, frankly, we don't watch Netflix that much. We only have it for the kids. Kids count. So,
or like those random special shows.
Yeah. Which is fine.
A random season of Drive to Survive.
Yeah, or if like Samantha watches the fucking Bridgerton series, like
yeah, that type or of thing. Like heaven forbid you gotta pull a meet and you gotta watch a Great British Baking Show. You
just gotta
it's your Christmas special.
There's that. I don't know. I mean, we don't anime's cheap, so that's good. I don't care to pay for anything, honestly. Like
the only thing I consistently pay for is Prime.
And even that,
like, and even that's getting real close to the only reason I'm really paying for it is because I do order enough to justify like shipping wise.
But Amazon still does free shipping on orders over $25,
right? And I could also very quickly justify myself in like planning out things if I really wanted to, and just like full cancel, open for a month, and then it's like, but I'm still ordering over $25 worth of stuff, so who gives a shit?
Yeah, there's never, I mean, rarely is there a point where I'm like, I need something immediately.
Right, and like right now I'm burning through, I started Jack Ryan, the final season.
Okay.
I need to watch Sand Job. I started Fallout. Like I went through and reorganized my list and went, okay, I could burn through all of these and I could probably just off this.
Yeah.
And then just go back to YouTube does pretty good and Dropout's $5 a month, so I might just watch Dropout the entire time. Yeah. Like
YouTube Premium went up.
Yeah, luckily I don't pay for that.
It's fucking ridiculous.
I'm on a family account with somebody. But if they ever say we're not paying for it anymore, I go, okay, I understand. And then I'm not paying for it myself.
Yeah.
Half the biggest thing I want to pay for, this goes back to something we've talked about before when we talk about Formula F1 TV and stuff. I want to give the Yankees money so they give me a channel that I can watch all the games on. Oh, by the way, I rewatched that video. It is not the Redbox one.
Okay.
It is the Venmo one.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a hell freezes over situation.
Right. But it's just like they're apparently they're going to be leaving Peacock. YouTube TV already doesn't carry a bunch of MLB games.
ESPN doesn't do their thing anymore.
Right. And so it's just like, all right, I'm not going to give any of you money unless I can get away from blackouts. So either I give Yes Network and they have a direct stream that I can hand them cash. I will drive to New York City once a month to give whoever has to take the cash out of my hand to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or I will illegally watch everything. Welcome to the real world, jackasses. You want to make it hard? I want to give you money. Why do you make it difficult? That's the confusing part to me. I want to give you
money. Yeah, yeah.
It's because you make it hard that I don't want to.
That's what, I mean, that's exactly was my Formula One thing. I was watching the races illegally because there was no good way for me to do it. And then they're like, oh, we're going to bring F1 TV to the United States. And I was like, thank you. Easiest purchase ever. Take my money. Give me the race. Fuck off.
Anything that opens where it's like, hey, you want to watch Oklahoma City games with no blackout for basketball for me? Done. You want to watch Yankees? No blackout? Done. I will pay for every individual sports license I have with no blackouts.
Mm-hmm.
I will pay for the individuals. I will pay that team for those streams of all of the games.
Yeah.
I don't care if you give me audio or not. Just show me the game.
So difficult. All right, number four.
Instead, we want to sign an exclusivity with Apple TV so we can be having a game on Friday. I'm done.
Number four. Microsoft has seen more changes behind the scenes. Windows Central reported that Xbox Emerging Technologies, a relatively new team believed to be primarily focused on AI, has been moved into the Xbox hardware division, which is led by Roanne Soans. In order to, quote, accelerate innovation in that space, end quote. The Emerging Tech team was previously led by corporate vice president Kareem Chaudhry, who has departed from Microsoft after 26 years. He was previously CVP for cloud gaming and oversaw Xbox's entry into the game streaming space. There are also two new teams within Xbox, one being an organization known as Xbox Experiences and Platforms, which is said to be focused on improving the overall user experience on both Xbox consoles and Windows. This is led by Ashley McKissick. There we go. And Kevin Gamill. Meanwhile, an internal email from Xbox president Sarah Bond, also reported by Windows Central, revealed the platform holder has created a new team that is focused on ensuring titles are playable on future Xbox devices. Other changes include Catherine Gluckstein heading up the Xbox.
What a fucking unfortunate last name.
Yeah. Gluckstein.
I was like just scrolling my phone looking at something else, and I heard you say that, and I had to immediately look up like,
yeah, what is that?
You see her in the office. You're like, sup, Gluck?
What's up, Gluck?
Gluck in the house. Gluck, 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 Gluck.
So Gluckstein is heading up the Xbox strategy and regulatory team, while Jennifer Cregan moves from Microsoft Advertising to Microsoft Gaming's Analytic and Business Planning. This all feeds into a quote from Sarah Bond's email that says, quote, "We are moving full speed ahead on our next generation hardware, focused on delivering the biggest technological leap ever in a generation," end quote.
Since the last biggest technical leap in a generation.
The theories that I've seen some analysts say and some other pundits and people is that Xbox is pushing hard to get the next generation out significantly sooner than PlayStation, because the best year or the best generation that Microsoft has had has been the Xbox 360, which launched a year before the PS3.
Yeah, which launched the year before the PS3, but also that's not the only part of the argument.
Yeah.
That's that like very careful thing where it's like exactly what we're talking about with the game studios and CEOs thinking like, oh, well, we'll get a lot of return out of this and like shooting way too high. It's like, no, just being a year ahead is not what made you do better.
Mm-hmm.
It helps, but you also need to not be $600 at launch. Be very easy to use, have exclusives, have all these things.
Time will tell. We shall see. They are skipping. They genuinely seem to be skipping the mid-cycle refresh. So,
which I always thought was usually bullshit anyway. Not them skipping it, but
yeah, like the fact that there is one.
Yeah,
yeah. I kind of am behind that theory that I think they are trying to launch the next console generation like significantly ahead of Sony.
Their launching of a next console generation becomes very interesting for me in terms of what does that mean for them launching the S and the X. It was a real fuck scenario because they still had what are we even on right now? Their naming conventions need a fucking redo.
Yeah.
Because above the S is the old one.
Yeah.
The One X.
Yep.
And then there's the Series X. But the S was so bad that it was actually would have been better to get the highest one of the generation before. Mm. You cannot have that happen again where something is confusing.
Yeah.
You, first off, need to just call yourselves Xbox number or something. You can't be calling an Xbox One Xbox box box.
Yeah.
Stop that.
Yeah.
Series, stop it.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see them come out with one console.
I would love that.
And then also if you can't,
in that same breath, to say, and this does not mean we're supporting old games.
Like, yeah, I mean,
we have backwards compatibility, but not simultaneous launches.
Yeah, I mean, one Xbox, and then like, hey, if you can't afford an Xbox, that's cool. X Cloud,
Right. Some type of streaming device or something.
Yeah.
We'll see, I guess. Number five, Disney Games has expanded its leadership team with two new hires of industry veterans, as well as three internal promotions. Ray Gresko and Bjorn Tornquist have joined the Disney Games team in new executive positions, while Jay Ung has been promoted. All three will report to Sean Shoptaw, who has been promoted to executive vice president of Disney Games. Gresko, former chief development officer at Blizzard Entertainment, has been hired as senior vice president of production and development. He has more than three decades of games industry experience as a programmer, designer, producer, and executive. He began his career at LucasArts as a lead programmer for games such as Star Wars Dark Forces and oversaw development on Overwatch, Hearthstone, and Diablo 3 during his time at Blizzard. Tornquist started his role as vice president of games in November last year. He has worked in leadership roles at Ubisoft and Massive Entertainment for over two decades, during which he founded Ubisoft's digital games publishing platform. Ong, who previously led the Marvel Games team, will now lead the global games licensing business. He has over 25 years' experience in the industry, having worked at Marvel, Blizzard Entertainment, EA Sports, and Xbox. Haluk Mentes will take over Ong's previous role, with Mentes previously being head of strategy and business at Marvel Games. These leadership changes come after the Walt Disney Company announced its $1.5 billion investment in Epic Games this February, and there are rumors that more investments may occur in the future.
Disney. Being Disney.
There's a lot of names and a lot of position title things in there.
There sure was. Let's just move right on.
Yeah, I don't really have... It's interesting to see them... Their backgrounds sound good. And decades of experience. So hopefully that becomes good things.
Yeah, hopefully. Number six, the Konami Group. This one's a funny one. The Konami Group has announced that it will raise its employees' base salary in Japan by March 2025. Full-time staffers will receive a basic salary increase of $33 monthly. In the announcement, Konami attributed the salary raises to, quote, stabilizing employee income and creating a rewarding work environment, end quote. Konami's March 2025 pay raises will be the firm's third consecutive fiscal year of base salary increases. Listen, salary increases are always good, no matter what. But, those are, you got to pump those numbers up, all right?
I mean, they've done so before.
They have done. This to me feels like a, like, I don't know, maybe I'm assuming, I don't know, I'm not a expert on the Japanese economy, but maybe regular raises aren't a norm, but this is kind of feels to me like a, you know, we're just going to adjust for inflation every, you know.
$33 a month is inflation adjustment?
I don't know, man. First off, Japan's got a weird... I say I'm not an expert in Japanese economy. Japan's got a weird fucking economy.
Here we go.
Their economy is based... It's some... They're like the only country in the world that has an economy like that. And they basically... It's built on the idea that they are like... They have massive amounts of debt. Like they... The way it's structured.
At the individual?
The country as a whole.
Oh, okay.
Just carries like massive amounts of debt and are just constantly creating massive amounts of debt. And like I read a whole article on it one time about like how it works and why it works that way. And I couldn't tell you because I read the article and I understood what they were saying, but like that's the wildest fucking shit ever.
Yeah, it's probably like, just some amount of ridiculous loophole-y mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, that's
that allows them to take debt on top of debt,
mm-hmm.
but then they also make enough to pay off this part of it.
It's like the most Japanese thing ever because it's like the most ridiculous house of cards that never seems to collapse.
Yeah, yeah. Japan.
Yeah, like everyone else, but more so.
That'll never leave our vernacular. That'll never, so good. For fucking three episodes in a hardcore history thing, and it'll never leave our vernacular. we'll be in the fucking middle of the country at some point doing like going to PAX or something and be like, ah, you mean like everybody else, but more so. And then the other people will be like, what are you talking about? And we'll just be like, yeah. Number seven, Gearbox Publishing San Francisco has officially rebranded into Arc Games. We're the same team of, quote, we're the same team of passionate gamers that brought you many beloved franchises, including the Remnant series, Have a Nice Death, Star Trek Online, and Neverwinter. We can't wait to bring you even more exciting titles like Gigantic Rampage Edition, Hyper Light Breaker, and more soon-to-be-announced games for 2025 and beyond, end quote. The publishing firm previously named Perfect World Entertainment was acquired by Embracer in 2021. Following the merger in 2022, it was renamed Gearbox Publishing. The Arc Games rebrand comes... News comes weeks after Take-Two announced it would acquire Gearbox Entertainment from Embracer in a $460 million deal. I forgot that they were Perfect World before.
Yeah, so did I.
Blast from the past.
Number eight, Blizzard Entertainment has renewed its publishing agreement with NetEase, which is set to begin this summer. Microsoft has also entered an agreement with the games firm to bring NetEase titles to Xbox consoles and other platforms. Blizzard and NetEase had previously been in a relationship for 14 years, which came to an end in 2022 as both companies failed to negotiate renewal of their agreement. Xbox CEO Phil Spencer said, quote, returning Blizzard's legendary games to players in China while exploring ways to bring more new titles to Xbox demonstrates our commitment to bringing more games to more players around the world, end quote. There it is. Microsoft reestablishing relationships. Basically making up with ex-lovers.
Something that we knew was basically going to be coming anyway.
Yeah.
Or we assumed anyway. Granted, there was all the stories of them trashing the studio, the like studios or whatever on the way out.
Yeah.
Number nine, a story trailer for Star Wars Outlaw has Outlaw or Outlaws?
I don't know. Outlaws probably.
A story trailer for Star Wars Outlaws was released that also included the release date of August 30th, 2024. Although if you buy the gold edition for $110 or the $130 ultimate edition or the other one where you give a kidney to them, you'll have early access starting on August 27th. The standard game will cost $70. Game Informer also published the latest digital issue with plenty of new info on the upcoming game. To start with, Ubisoft Massive clarified there won't be free-form space travel between planets in Star Wars Outlaws. Similar to Bethesda Starfield, players will jump between the orbits of the planets they're allowed to visit. The developers added there will be lots to do in space, such as fighting pirates and landing on nearby space stations. It will all tie back to the reputation system that is the backbone of Star Wars Outlaws. Lead systems designer Matthew Delisle said, quote, if you have a bad reputation with the syndicates, they won't let you in. You can sneak in, but if you get caught, you will be kicked out. However, if you have a good reputation once you've worked good rep with the Pike Syndicate, for example, you'll be able to freely go in and then you can get access to a bunch of opportunities. That can be things like jobs for the syndicates, merchants with some of the better stuff for sale, intel rumors, and it can also be high-stakes Sabacc tablets. Sabacc tablets. The syndicates are hubs of opportunities that you get access to with the right rep.
Big old thing.
Wanted to let me know about if I wanted to receive notifications from Outlook parentheses new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm
on the fence.
Yeah, I'm still skeptical.
Timeline
seems too short for the game being developed well.
It does, but it's Massive, which innately I give Massive my blessing.
Yeah.
Because of what they did with Division 1 and 2.
Yeah. I guess
they announced Division Heartland before this.
Yes. I guess my beef is more with the fact of how much people are hyping it up.
Yes. But I think that will almost always be true with the Star Wars title.
Yes. I kind of expect it to be similar in scope to Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
I agree. And I'll say this. I think your best outcome
is Immortals Fenyx Rising.
Like, it's a sleeper.
Like, that quality.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, not even sleeper, necessarily.
But that quality. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
But that quality.
Mm-hmm. No, I'd be all right with that. I would be all right with that.
Which, that's good. That's mm-hmm. just not...
Honestly, I would be happy with it.
Right.
I just hope they don't... I'd probably
like that better than Jedi Survivor.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't fall into all the Star Wars tropes where, like... And I already kind of got the vibe from the trailer when they show her running away from the Star Destroyer, which is fine, because if she's a smuggler, then she's going to do that. But then one of the antagonists says, you know, didn't tell me the truth about her. She's into things that we don't know about. I don't want it to become like a, oh, she's getting in with the rebellion type thing. I don't want it to have anything to do with...
Right, which it sounds like they're trying to avoid by going to the Outer Rim and...
Yeah.
And placating it mainly there.
Yeah, I genuinely hope it's an underworld game, and it doesn't...
Stay underworld.
Yes.
Like, yes, are you going to deal with the Empire? Yes. Could you also, like, run into a pocket of rebels where, like, you accidentally, in quotes, like, they rescue you in one scenario and you just kind of, like, do something with them, but then you go back to do it?
Yeah.
Fine. But don't make this a... Here's the things they can't do.
Yeah.
They can't visit Tatooine. I'm just going to name things they can't do, or I'll scream.
Yep.
Can't go to Tatooine.
Which is hilarious that we've gotten to this point. Because Tatooine should be an Outer Rim planet that should have smuggling on it. But you beat that dead horse to literally
glue.
Glue. Just mush on the ground. I don't want to fucking see that planet ever again.
No, I literally don't. So they can't go to Tatooine.
Yep. I guarantee you the game starts on Tatooine.
Also, in not going to Tatooine, I can't see two suns or two moons anywhere. I'll lose my mind. But those are kind of tied. This already is a problem, and they can't change it, but you need to get better about naming Star Wars characters.
Yeah.
You named... Respawn named their guy Cass. You named yours Vess.
Mm-hmm.
Please, for the love of God, get better.
Yes.
What else can't they do? You can't become force sensitive.
Yeah, no force in this game at all, actually. Just none.
I don't mind if you kind of run into like the Rogue One force people, where it's a blind dude just constantly walking around going, I am one with the force is with me. And mm-hmm. You're like, he's weird. And then they just kind of like move on. Like, that's just like the end of it type of thing. That's fine. But mainly, stop that. Don't have you join one or the other. Have full... if I don't see Greedo or Bossk, I'm going to lose my mind.
I did see a...
You saw a Greedo cousin.
Yeah, a Rodian in there.
Yeah, I can't remember the phrase.
Yeah.
But so, just something like that. Like, don't give me IG-88. Don't make a TV show or movie reference.
Mm-hmm.
Bring back Terran Carr. That's like a fucking shot in the dark that no one will ever do, but it'd be entertaining for me.
Yeah.
because it's Empire at War, but a fucking expansion of Empire at War, which is the best part of that.
I don't know when this happened takes place in the timeline either.
No.
All right, number 10. Unless there's anything else you want to talk about with Star Wars.
Trying to think if there's anything else I can't have them do. I'm worried about the pet thing.
Yeah, that seems to be like a common thing now.
It's like we just now always have a sidekick.
Mm-hmm. That's a droid or pet.
That's a droid or pet because it saves us from having to figure out if they're intelligent or not.
Yeah.
They get to just be this stupid thing that goes... Burr, burr, burr,
burr. I go get you thing. Yeah.
Yeah. They're fucking... oh, God, not Ellie. Oh, my God, what's her name from BioShock Infinite? Where you just be, I don't know how much you remember.
Yeah, she would like...
Fuck her, catch! And yeah, she'd throw you like a fucking
med pack or whatever.
Med pack, coins randomly, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, number 10.
Like, it makes me want to go back and play the Old Republic. And I know that I'm foreshadowing partially to this next story, but it because I saw the words Old Republic, but it, it makes me want to go back and play that because the campaigns that you played in each individual class as Siths, as bounty hunters, as Imperial soldiers, as Jedi, as whatever, these class stories are probably still some of the best versions of Star Wars telling while taking place in an entire universe and giving you a companion that actually means something.
Mm-hmm.
And multiple thereof, technically, but...
Yeah.
Like, I remember going through the Sith Inquisitor one for the first time and meeting my the homie Keemval.
Yeah.
And he's like, I eat Force users for breakfast. And you're like, you want to come hang out with me?
That was dope.
Don't pay attention to my Force lightning, but you want to hang out?
Yeah. That... Old Republic is underrated.
It really is.
Was underrated as well. All right, number 10.
If they made a M plus and like whatever, like a Mythic plus something. And
yeah.
I don't know, man. There's just something about that game that like.
It's good. It's
I think about shit. It every now and then. I'm like, I wish more people played.
Yeah. I do wish it was more successful and like more. Had longer legs. Although it's still going.
Yeah.
Number 10, Lorik Games has announced its debut title, Echoes of Elysium, an airship survival RPG. Quote, set in the heavens of mythical ancient Greece, end quote. The game will be released on Steam, where it's now available to wishlist, and is listed as coming soon. No other platforms have been confirmed. An official description of the game reads, quote, an aerial exploration and survival game set in the procedural world of Elysium. Fire up the engines and take to the skies in your handcrafted fleet of airships. Mechanical wonders clash with ancient mysteries in an untamed paradise, end quote. Northern Virginia-based Lorik Games was founded in 2022 by former Mythic Entertainment veterans Brian Johnson, Ray Soto, and Mythic's co-founder Rob Denton. During their time at Mythic and BioWare, the trio worked together on the likes of Ultima Online, Dark Age of Camelot, Warhammer Online, and Star Wars The Old Republic. Interesting. Sounds unique.
It does.
I will have to see more before, you know, any sort of judgments are made. But decent track record. For
indeed,
yeah, for games.
That was the Old Republic reference that I was talking about. We'll have to keep an eye out because an airship survival RPG sounds at least like a different enough genre where I'm like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, like, what does that mean?
Does that mean that like I own an airship?
Yeah, I mean, they make it sound like you own multiple airships,
right. Number 11, Epic Games has filed an injunction order that would permit third-party app stores on the Google Play Store for 6 years. Epic's suggestions include that Google should allow access to its Play Store app catalog and allow app library porting for 6 years. The proposal included multiple actions that Google should be prohibited from, for example, agreements with actual or potential competing distributors and no exclusivity. Additionally, Epic proposes that Google creates a compliance committee and retain a compliance officer according to antitrust laws and the injunction. Fortnite maker's injunction filing comes 4 months after it won its antitrust trial against Google. Google issued a statement in response to Epic's injunction filing. A representative said, quote, Epic's filing to the U.S. federal court shows again that it simply wants the benefits of Google Play without having to pay for it. We'll continue to challenge the verdict as Android is an open mobile platform that faces fierce competition from the Apple App Store, as well as app stores on Android devices, PCs, and gaming consoles, end quote. If you give a mouse a cookie, they will want a glass of milk.
Epic. Doing epic things.
And if you give a moose a pancake?
It'll want some syrup?
I believe that's how that next one goes.
Interesting.
New it's been a while me. Since I've read those books.
All right, number 12, the first ever Triple I Initiative Showcase took place April 10th. With more than 30 studios showcasing their latest projects, the name III refers to how these games stem from independent game studios as compared to AAA games from large teams and studios. The 40-minute showcase featured 35 games in all. And we are going to rip through them real quick.
Oh, God. Okay.
Real fast. Quick like a bunny. Slay the Spire 2 was announced.
Yep.
And it will be in Early Access 2025. Risk of Rain 2 Devotion Update was announced during the showcase, with it coming soon. Kill Knight from Playside Studios, launching in 2024. Shadow of a Doubt from Fireshine Games. My Time at Sandrock, a cozy-looking farm life sim. Co-op, coming to PC. Dino Lords, a game with a cool concept. You're a knight who rides dinosaurs. Got it. Gestalt, Steam and Cider, coming May 21st. Vampire Survivors. Flintlock, The Siege of Dawn. Never Alone 2, which is a Humble Games. Cataclysmo. Death Must Die. End Zone 2. Dyson Sphere Program. Why does that sound familiar? Undermine 2. Norland. What the Car?
From the makers of What the Golf.
Yep. Darkest Dungeon. RKGK, which is a Gearbox Publishing one. Broken Roads. Raven's Watch Fall of Avalon. A co-op roguelike. Cat Quest 3.
Woo! Cat Quest.
Hyper Light Breaker. The Last Spell. Lacera Summit Kingdom. Wizard of Legend 2. Let's School. Brotato. New DLC for Brotato. Chaya. T'Chaya. However the hell you say that.
T'Challa?
T'Challa? T'Chaya? To what?
Black Panther?
No.
Oh.
Streets of Rogue 2. That's what 2. I was like,
wait, I'm not looking at it. Streets of Rogue, good game.
Old World Behind the Throne. Paw World Arena was announced. That was kind of one of the bigger ones.
Did you say Paw World?
Paw World? Pal World? I don't know.
Pal. Or pals.
Pal, yeah, that's true.
Not
pal.
Pals.
I don't know why I say Paul. All right.
We got some cats up.
Bad brains. 33 Immortals. Mouse. V Rising. And then finally, The Rogue Prince of Persia, which is from Evil Empire, who made Dead Cells.
Diarrhea. Christmas lights.
And that'll be in Steam Early Access in May.
All right, then.
And it'll probably be another good game not made by Ubisoft.
True. Here we go, then. Number 13, Baldur's Gate 3 was the big winner at this year's BAFTA Game Awards, taking home 5 prizes. And now it's time for Rumor Roundup.
Rumor Roundup.
According to The Verge's Tom Warren, the 2024 Xbox Games Showcase will take place on Sunday, June 9th. Warren reiterates that we'll likely get our first peek at Gear 6 during the show, as well as new trailers and release dates from Microsoft Flight Simulator 2024, Avowed, and Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. Interestingly, Warren also claims that the next Call of Duty will be officially unveiled at Xbox's show. Where are Fable and Perfect Dark?
That was my...
It's a fair question.
Yeah.
Where's Richard Iowati? B, via Tom Henderson, Xbox may be gearing up to make announcements on old Call of Duty games coming to Xbox Game Pass during the June Game Showcase. Interesting. C, in an interview, Final Fantasy XIV and Final Fantasy XVI producer Naoki Yoshida teased that it was time for another Final Fantasy Tactics. New details about the upcoming Prince of Persia Sands of Time remake have reportedly surfaced via Tom Henderson. Fans should forget everything they have heard or seen from the reveal trailer from years ago as the remake is being built completely from scratch.
graphics, animations, combat mechanics, and parkour have been overhauled to offer a more realistic approach. Realistic, they read Assassin's Creed.
That was kind of understating. They apparently, according to Tom Henderson, they completely threw everything out.
Oh,
and great. Started from scratch.
That explains a lot. Bungie. Bungie. Tablet, please coordinate with me. Bungie shared a bunch of details about Destiny 2, the Final Shape expansion, including the new Prismatic subclass, which corroborates some Destiny 3 leaks. Quote, Destiny 3 is in development under the code name Payback. One of the big changes for Destiny 3 is for classes to no longer exist and allow any character to spec into any ability, since lore-wise, there is no reason you couldn't. Hunters explicitly learn Blink from Warlocks, and Blink isn't tied to a single game element, hence the logic there, end quote. During the Final Shape livestream, Bungie's Luke Smith dropped the following tease to fans, quote, facing the witness is not the end of Destiny 2, and it's definitely not the end of Destiny. After you face the witness, we're gonna tell you what's coming to next to Destiny 2 and beyond.
Just let it
so
die.
We're gonna call it the Final Shape. We're gonna do more to Destiny 2 because you know
how many
fuck you.
How many have we had? The Last Light, the Final Shape. How many? Is this gonna be one of those games that this game has 10 endings?
The Witness's Final Vision, or like the
I don't
final.
Even, I don't even
final.
Know. I have no idea what's going on in Destiny.
No, neither do I. And I don't want. Frankly, I don't want to know. I'm more curious of like when Destiny 3 comes out. Do you guys fuck up so hard again?
Yeah. All right, now for questionable things we didn't write full paragraphs on.
Woo!
Blizzard has announced a release date for World of Warcraft Cataclysm Classic. A pre-expansion patch will be released on April 30th, and then Cataclysm Classic on May 20th.
And I'm not playing it.
That's fair. UK game studio Future Lab, the maker of Power Wash Simulator, has joined digital entertainment firm Miniclip. Future Lab will continue having creative control over its game development and studio operations. NetEase mobile battle royale FPS Bloodstrike has reached 30 million downloads. It launched on October 28th.
Not bad.
Developers at Life is Strange True Color Studio Deck 9 have voiced concerns about hate speech, crunch, toxic behavior, and management that was in some cases unresponsive to serious concerns and in other cases protected abusers on staff. Lo-Fi Games RPG Kenshi has sold 2.3 million units after launching on Steam in December of 2018. Black Salt Games and Story Kitchen have announced that they will adapt Dredge into a live-action movie.
That one's going to be a weird one.
Yes.
Because I immediately picture, so here's him. Here was the immediate casting in my head when I heard that. Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson from The Lighthouse were my immediate, yes, put them in it.
Yeah.
Which was just like my immediate one-to-one, like that fits, do that. Tell me I'm wrong.
Video games so hot right now in movies.
What's the other one?
I mean, just in general.
Okay.
Just everything, you know, like.
I was saying, hot in TV shows for sure.
TV shows and movies, just that kind of entertainment, I guess, as a whole. Apple has made changes to its guidelines on the App Store, making retro emulators available globally.
That's an interesting one.
Larian's.
You want to talk about arguing about fucking other app stores, but then you're going to put emulators on there for a bunch of people to probably put illegal emulators of.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting moral choice there, Apple.
Who knows what they're up to. Larian's head of publishing, Michael Dowse, said that they will likely use early access again for their next title.
Their early access ran for like 5 years.
Yeah. But then they released the killer game. Sea of Thieves PS5 open beta is taking place this weekend until the 15th.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. For the Larian thing, like they were at PAX when we were there.
Yeah.
That's kind of wild. I say they were at PAX specifically the year you were there, because I was there after that.
I don't understand how that works so well for them.
They got Google money. Remember, they were supposed to be a Stadia release.
Yeah.
Stadia.
Yeah, but to be in early access and then release a game and it just to sell like crazy.
Right.
Like the math doesn't work in my head.
I think there's enough where I'm like, I would actually be curious what their early access numbers were.
Yeah.
Like how many people were actively playing early access and actively playing? Because I believe they were just dropping like slices of game. So how many times were people actually in it doing it? Or just saying like, I want to just wait till the full thing.
I'm assuming they had a really small but dedicated early like a access. A
couple thousand.
Yeah. Who were like, they all, like, you know, they were coming back for every slice and actually giving good
correct feedback and testing. And
because if it was any bigger than that, I feel like people wouldn't have bought the game.
You know? Right.
Like,
right.
They'd be like, oh, it's.
I think you still would have had that, like, not immediate launch, but like the upswing, like 2 weeks to a month in when everybody's like, dude, I told you this is going to be good and it's better than I thought. Like, you have to play this. Or, like, they start watching people's stream playthroughs and, like, that influx still would have happened, but mm-hmm. the initial drop influx was still massive.
Mm-hmm.
But, hey, guess what? It's been 7 days. What you been up to?
You know, chilling.
Being chilling?
Chilling. Nothing really new. Still reading through the manga of Solo Leveling. Solo Leveling. It's good. It's getting weird.
Okay, so it's a manga.
Yep. Watched.
That's just how they go.
Watched the first episode of the Fallout TV show, as you did.
Are you on the Solo Leveling thing?
Yes.
Are you trying to read it before the anime comes out?
The first season of the anime came out, and I am well past where I watched the first season of the anime, and then I went to the manga.
Gotcha.
And I'm now, like, well past...
Where that ended type of
where thing. That ended and where the second season would end, and I'm like...
Okay, all right.
I didn't realize how long-running this one was. I think I'm on chapter, like, 100 and something.
Oh, okay. What were your thoughts on first episode of Fallout?
I was... pleasantly surprised by a good portion of it.
Okay.
It's
a lot of setup.
It was a lot of setup. I thought the episode, my criticisms are that I thought the episode was too long. It could have been shorter.
It's like an hour 15, I think.
Yep. It was choppy.
Okay. Yeah.
I didn't like the whole, I wasn't a big fan of the weird transitions where it was like Lucy, I can't remember the guy's name. The ghoul, like those like black screen transitions was weird to me.
Oh, yeah, okay.
There were some weird cuts, but then my coworker brought up, like, it felt like there should have been commercials there, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Prime does that.
Or could do that.
It could do that, and I'm like, I don't have those.
Here do I.
So that makes sense. I'm just so used to not having to deal with commercials that I'm not used to those like, commercial cuts.
I mean, that's about the stop period that they would have been at, but mm-hmm. It still did feel weird to just have like an abrupt,
mm-hmm.
and now we're going over here. Because even coming out of commercial, you would have just been like, we're not talking about everything we just showed you, new thing. Like yeah. that cut still would have been brutal.
Yeah. I think that's it for my criticisms for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, it was a typical first episode. It's just, I think the reason it has to be an hour 15, like, yes, it was long, but... Is and the reason that it felt like it was long is it's so much setup.
I have another concern that I think
we were in and out of the vault in one episode.
Yeah. I think that it might be hard.
I guess we go back in technically in episode in later episodes, but still.
I think it might be hard for people who aren't familiar with Fallout to get into it. Or to understand what's going on.
Yeah, I feel like I think that will get explained as time goes on because you watch the episode ends and then they do that like this season on Fallout and they kind of do the run through.
Yeah, I watched that.
It looks like they're going to get further into explaining the entire like Vault Tech idea and everything.
Yeah.
So it's like in episode one, you're not going to get that. But once they actually do that, you'll understand. And I think that kind of makes it like we know where it's headed. But
as far as I was honestly, I was. prior to watching the episode, my biggest concern was going to be, okay, I think the acting's probably going to be not good. And I ended up leaving the episode being like, wow, I was really surprised by how good the acting was.
Yeah, I was initially in that same worry that there were going to be some spots where I'm like, this is going to be hard, because I'm sure a lot of it is greened or the volume or whatever, where it's like, unless you're both a really good actor, actress that knows how to pull that off,
mm-hmm.
and they actually do a good thing of like visualizing things around you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to be very difficult. And the only time I think that I was worried, majority of my worriness was within the vault. And the funny thing about that is it's not even so much worriedness about the acting, because the acting wasn't bad. The problem is that it's a vault, which is fully in that early, the Fallout style we know of early, everything has its purpose, everything does whatever. Like when she's immediate spoilers for what I'm going to say. In terms of if you want to hear a punchline. So come back and fast forward 30 seconds, I'll say the line. But when she immediately is like, well, what's your sperm count? Sperm is crucial to rebuilding the country or whatever. And it's just like, oh yeah, you guys are vault people that have never learned how to like have a normal conversation with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, you know, you go through the entire reveal and all that yeah. stuff. But it's just like those conversations where it's like, well, I want to put myself in this scenario and do these things. And it's like, I'm guessing, I assume in episode 2 or 3, that's when immediately that gets beaten out of her on the surface of like, you can't be that anymore. Like,
yeah.
That's not how this works.
And
the boot thing was disgusting from Brotherhood.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was pretty gross. What else was I gonna say? I think that's
Brotherhood thing will be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah.
How he's a lackey to a suit, but then clearly gains the suit at some point.
Yeah. I think, I can't remember if there's anything else.
And it makes me hate the Brotherhood of Steel. I forget that I do hate them technically.
Yeah, everyone's had that same reaction as like my coworker that watched it and we were talking about it. He's like, yeah, I hate the Brotherhood of Steel. And they did a really good job of like
why you should hate them.
And
well, they gave you enough where if you remember, like if you've played the games or whatever, you hate them. But if you don't truly know, they only gave you like a little bit of a taste.
So he said that you get more of that in episode 2.
Right, because they don't give you the full.
Yeah, he's.
The worst thing they do is the courtyard scene, and when his friend that's supposed to go says the steel line, the one about like flesh and whatever, steel is strong, yada yada.
Yeah.
Like they say that like catchphrase. Those are like the two most offensive things they do, and you kind of have that where you go, oh yeah, I forgot how bad you guys were about this.
Yeah. So apparently they show more of that in episode 2, is what he was saying. Other than that, I was happy with it. I thought it was felt really good, looked really good, and
yeah, looks good. The power armor does actually look really good.
Yeah, like some of the leaked shots, like the trailer, the armor movement felt a little wonky to me, and I was concerned. But now, like,
right? But once they were actually in scene, it actually now looks better.
Watching it and seeing the world, I was like, holy fuck, they did a really good job on this. So
yeah, it'll definitely be interesting. I plan on watching more of it this weekend, but yeah, so that's
same.
I mean, that's all I got. I mean, it was mainly watch Ryan play the normal stuff, nothing too crazy, working on some code stuff or whatever. But when I'm playing like I was playing Marvel Snap and ranking up in that and watching Fallout, so it's like, you know, I was almost like half watching, and I had to rewind a couple times when I was like, that cut seemed really raw. Did I miss something? And then it's like, nope, I didn't miss anything. They just cut. And I was like, okay, well,
yeah.
But yeah, so that's all I got.
I'm good.
All right, then. We shall see you guys in 7 days. Toodaloo. Bye bye. Farewell.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.